Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and one of the brightest guys that I know. He is terrific. And Tim, welcome and thanks for being here. It always makes the program better.
Oh, it's great to be here, Alan.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about your role as a pollster first. These are mighty strange times. We have rampant Trumpism. We have people who are infuriated, particularly in blue state New York and blue state Massachusetts. What are you finding in the polls? Anything that indicates angst?
What we're seeing in the polls is an absolute deepening of political polarization in the country, in the sense that when you look at President Trump's approval ratings, he's improved a little bit in recent days since his speech to the joint session of Congress. He's still underwater, though. About half the country disapproves in the latest Gallup rolling survey, and about 44% approve. But when you break it out by partisanship, the differences are so stark in terms of just the minuscule number of Democratic voters who support the president, and then the massive number of Republican voters who support him. And again, the polarization, it would be hard to imagine that it could have gotten more stark, but it really has since the election.
So let me change from pollster to political scientist, which you are, and ask you this. Considering how many legislatures have seriously gerrymandered their areas, that when you see, you simply say, well, the Republicans are for Trump and the Democrats and the independents may not be so much. But if the gerrymander has worked in states like New York, where the New York State Senate is seriously gerrymandered, then you put one and one equals two and you see how the Republicanism, the pro-Trump Republicanism, really pays off.
Yeah, it certainly does. What we've learned since the election is there's been a more critical assessment of the Democratic Party and how it has fared at the state and local level during the past 8 years. And it's really not a good story. It has withered in terms of the number of state legislative seats held, number of governorships held. The Democratic Party is at a historic low in terms of its influence. It's as if the party had focused so much attention on presidential politics and turned away from the infrastructure building, the bench building at the state and local level. And that at the state level, that's where these district lines get drawn every 10 years. And so the party, the Democratic Party, has an enormous rebuilding job ahead of it and not a lot of time before the next redistricting, which will come after the 2020 census.
2018. Also, talking about bad news for the Democrats, 2018 doesn't look healthy for the Democrats either. They had their chance this time. They blew it. The next time, the Democrats have to defend a lot more seats, particularly in the Senate, than the Republicans do.
They do, and they're defending seats that the Democrats had won in 2012 in a presidential election cycle where Barack Obama was on the ballot. And now at a midterm election, some of these seats in some red states or leaning red states, Missouri comes to mind, North Dakota comes to mind. They're going to have to play defense, very few opportunities for them to play offense. And so what they're going to have to do is rally their base, which has been a real challenge for Democrats in midterm elections. Those aren't elections where the base likes to turn out in great numbers. What we're seeing right now, though, in the aftermath of the 2016 election is a real awakening of Democratic activism. We've certainly seen it in Massachusetts. And if the party can tap into that and channel that and keep it running for the next almost 2 years, it will be very interesting outside of heavily blue states like Massachusetts to see whether they can overcome some of these structural problems, not just in the Senate, but in particular in the House of Representatives as well.
So the more that Trump tweets in the mornings, upsets people, says things that are either prevarications or downright lies, the more that he does that, the more he excites the Democratic base, which should help them a little bit, right?
It should. It should. I have to say, just watching the process in Massachusetts, the state Democratic Party is finishing up its caucus season, where the town and city committees across the state pick their delegates to the state convention, which will be held at UMass Lowell in early June. This is high weeds stuff. This is not sexy politics. The convention's going to hammer out the platform that the party will run on in Massachusetts in 2018. So these caucuses should be pretty sleepy affairs. What we're seeing, though, across the state are packed rooms, and we're seeing contested races for delegate to the state convention. And folks who've been doing this for a long time are saying there's an energy here born out of all kinds of emotions, anger, frustration, worry, anxiety, that if the party can sustain that energy and that increase in activism, there could be some interesting races in 2018 at the House level, not in Massachusetts, but in other parts of the country where seats long thought to be out of the grasp of Democrats might come into play.
Tim Bresolotti, I'm hearing in my mail, I get it virtually every day, from unhappy Bernieites. And you say that there are these potential, face-offs between various kinds of Democrats. Is that a residue of Bernieism?
Oh, there is. There is. No question about it. That one of the challenges facing the party is healing some of the divisions from 2016. And we saw it at the national level with the election of the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. Again, not typically a headline event, but it became one to the point where there were even nationally televised debates among those candidates. And there was a division where Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota was the favored candidate of the Bernie supporters, and Bernie Sanders had supported him as well. And then Tom Perez, former Labor Secretary in the Obama administration, was viewed as a more establishment candidate, although he would be the first Latino chair of the Democratic National Committee. So Perez squeaked out a win. Bernie Sanders supporters at the DNC meeting were angry about it. And Perez, to his credit, immediately named Ellison as his deputy chair. Ellison took the mic and said, "We cannot leave this meeting divided. There's too much riding on this." But it's clear that there's still a lot of divisions and hurt feelings from the 2016 Democratic primary season, and the party has to work on that if it's to provide some kind of credible, united front going into the 2018 midterms.
I only have a minute, but Ellison, of course, is a Muslim. Did that figure into all of this, do you think?
I think it may have contributed to his appeal in some quarters of the Democratic Party. If the party wanted to draw as strong a contrast as possible in terms of its opposition to President Trump's travel ban, recently revised and signed again, Ellison provided a powerful symbolism in terms of putting him at the leadership of the party. And he remains a potent symbol and a well-regarded critic of the Trump administration, even though he did not carry the day in terms of winning the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
Tim Bresolotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, one of the smartest men I know. And Tim, always wonderful to have you. When we come back, let's talk about a Republican and a Democrat the next time. We'll talk about the governor and the senator, okay?
I look forward to it.